This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome to this week's 45th podcast. I am here with Wad this week. Robbie is out. Be back next week. Welcome back to the show.
It's always fun. Now we're not in a government shutdown, so I'm glad America's back to normal.
Yeah, in case you missed the big news, the shutdown is over. I believe last episode, we ended the show with a prediction from both Robbie and I that, nah, the shutdown will not be over by next episode. So,
you guys are just, you know, sometimes you need to see the bright side of life. You know, you just took a major airport shutting down and 800,000 people and, you know, the potential of like $11 billion, actually not the potential, but $11 billion lost to the U.S. economy. And, you know, just be a little bit more optimistic there, Susan. Your cynicism really bothers me.
Yeah, we definitely called that one wrong. We are definitely way overestimating Trump's ability to stick through something. So in hindsight,
you weren't actually incorrect, because my prediction the whole time was, I remember it was like, you know, I was on these cable shows and everyone in D.C. is still wants normalcy, like 2 years into the Trump presidency. And I keep telling them this is not a normal president, because, you know, everyone wants to go. Everyone wants business to go back to normal in D.C. And they just want to go back to the rules. And, you know, everyone has their role. And I'm like, he is going to break the record for the longest government shutdown, which was originally held under the Clinton administration in 1995. I said he's going to go right past it. And my prediction was it would take 2 to 3 missed paychecks, because that's when it really hurts Americans. And it would take a major airport shutting down, or the TSA just saying F it and not showing up for work. So what happened was, of course, LaGuardia, which is the armpit of the American airports, happened to shut down, and 2 missed paychecks. So that's what happened. And apparently now they're saying, well, it's Trump, so he's learned his lesson. And 3 weeks from now, he's definitely not going to shut it down. But I don't know. He might declare the national emergency to placate his base. Let's see.
Yeah, well, it took several almost actual emergencies to finally push things to the brink. Well, the shutdown did end. I mean, it didn't seem like we could have gone a few more days like that. It seemed like at some point something big was going to crack open, and still might. Either being, you know, air travel or food inspection or food stamps not being distributed, tax returns not going back to people. It was definitely at breaking point. Plus the courts, the U.S. federal courts had like stretched out their funding to every conceivable maximum amount. And I think they're like hard stop, we can't do shit anymore line was like February 2nd. And they were still limping along. I mean, everything was breaking down.
I still think, and maybe this is the cynic in me now, I don't think he'd care about the food stamps. I don't think he'd really care about the IRS. I don't think he'd care about the food inspection. I think what really did it was LaGuardia. I think the airport shutting down is something which has a direct effect and impact on a lot of people in Washington, D.C. And I think also the 2 missed paychecks, plus the fact that his poll numbers slightly went down. And even then, I'm not really sure if that really motivated him. The fact that those 6 Republican senators came out and broke with him, you know, we predicted it would be Cory Gardner, of course, and he was the first one to be most vocal because he's the most vulnerable in 2020. But even then, I think it was that airport shutting down. And, you know, some people were saying, oh, that Roger Stone indictment is what finally forced him to do it, to kind of pivot away. I don't know. I think maybe that airport shutting down plus the 2 missed paychecks was finally what did it. And you know, that chaos that we've heard about, where apparently the senators were turning against Mitch McConnell because they're feeling the heat from their base, you know, and which just goes to show you again that, you know, everyone's blaming Trump. I also always want to blame Mitch McConnell, because Mitch McConnell could have literally ended this on day one by wrangling up the votes necessary in the Senate to make sure that there was funding. He decided to abdicate that responsibility to go with Trump. This is a man with 30 years of experience who's negotiated a crisis like this before in the Obama administration. But he chose, Susan, to be Mitch McConnell, and he Mitch McConnell the situation. So I know, like, you know, it's one of those things where everyone's blaming Trump, but I also want us to also blame Mitch McConnell.
McConnell really has abdicated his role as, well, just a senator, full stop, or even as the leader. I mean, it does seem like he marches in line with Trump to a far greater degree than I expected, more so than Ryan did even.
I mean, not just him, though, but just look what happened last week, the RNC unanimously supported Donald Trump, right? They gave like this loyal pledge of fealty.
With tons of typos in it.
Yeah. Thank you. Tons of typos because true to form. But this is what happens, honestly, in authoritarian regimes. And this is what happens in like fascist governments, right? This is when people say, oh, the Republican Party slowly but surely is turning into a cult party. I don't think they're wrong, because this is a type of a cultist mindset where, as the president and Mitch McConnell have shut down the government for 35 days, which caused so much chaos, you just hinted at it, you know, at the top of the show. And his approval rating now is, what, to 38%. And the tax cuts, which is the signature policy achievement of the Trump administration. Now, this week, again and again, every time we get their updates, the tax cuts did not generate that economic boom. It seems that rich people really enjoyed their tax cuts and ended up spending it not on the economy. It didn't trickle down and went back to their savings accounts and purchases for themselves. And now we have a huge soaring deficit where, remember back in the day, Susan, Republicans were deficit hawks? Remember that?
I remember back in the day when they, you know, gave lip service to being that.
Oh, and also remember they were against Russia? Remember the 1980s?
I don't recall the 1980s, but I remember that was the thing that once happened.
Oh yeah, it was a glorious movie called Rocky IV, where Sylvester Stallone saved capitalism by destroying Ivan Drago in Russia, and Mikhail Gorbachev rose up and gave American capitalist Rocky Balboa a standing ovation. Those, my friends, was when America was great. But alas, now we have all this chaos.
Well, let's flash back to a month ago when the shutdown was still just a wee little thing, not yet a record-setting month-long shutdown of a good chunk of the federal government. At that point, it was still kind of unclear who was going to be the winner, who's like, you know, to the extent you can have winners and losers for like a massive U.S. crisis. I remember the headline that was late December. It said, Team Trump gleeful that shutdown will hijack Pelosi's big moment.
Yeah.
They were happy at the time because they thought that Pelosi, who's, you know, reclaimed her title as Speaker of the House, her big shining moment, or whatever they thought it was, would be ruined by the shutdown and Trump controlling the stage. That is not what happened.
Nope.
It was definitely, at least in the media and to some extent in reality, a showdown between Pelosi and Trump, who would hold the line longer. Pelosi never goddamn blinked. She held the line, and it seemed effortlessly. Democrats were united behind her. There were some really kind of sad attempts by the White House and Trump to sort of split off, quote unquote, the rank and file Democrats from her, but they, you know, didn't show up to that luncheon they planned to discuss policy. And whether it was because of the bad poll numbers, LaGuardia shutting down, or just because it became very clear that the Democrats were not going to break, so someone realized that you might as well end the pain now, Trump backed down. And then, of course, was the other option. And that's that Trump decided to end the shutdown because he really, 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 really wanted to be on TV and give a State of the Union with all the pomp and circumstance he wanted accompanying that.
Yeah, I mean, look, Nancy Pelosi, according to her daughters, like eats glass for breakfast, right? And you don't want to mess with Nancy Pelosi. She has tremendous experience. And it just goes to show you sometimes that you need people in power sometimes who get shit done, who really aren't concerned about, like, you know, retweets and likes and selfies. And this is not a knock, by the way, on Alexandria Cortez. I'm just saying, you know, the millennial generation, you know, you go for the quick fix, right? You go for the trend. But Nancy Pelosi is like, no, I've done this before. I got this. And her and Schumer got a big victory because Donald Trump, and again, another self-destructive moment on live TV, took ownership of his own shutdown. So it was his. And Democrats wisely said, listen, there's really no reason for us to negotiate with Donald Trump because it's his shutdown. It's his mess. So we'll wait this out, because no matter how much you love Donald Trump, I guarantee you, you love your paycheck more. Like it literally, like I said, it would take 2 to 3 paychecks. And eventually people would be like, do I want to feed my family, or do I want a wall at the border? A border where I'm never going to visit. And most people are like, nope, I kind of want my tax rebate and I want a paycheck and I want to travel and this is not worth it. And he got stuck. And he got stuck because he's now hijacked, Susan, by this base, right? He's kind of stuck. He literally is stuck between a wall and a hard place. And you have to think about this for a second. A man who literally rose on this myth, a fake myth that he created, the art of the deal, was unable to close the deal. Like, if this was a negotiation, this is literally what they would teach you in law school as the worst negotiation of all time. Like, this is how we would study this. Like, there's no deal here. He just lost. Because if you think about it, after 35 days, what did he get? Bad poll numbers. The Republican Party seems incompetent and reckless. The support for the border wall has decreased. His base has turned against him also, right? Lou Dobbs went against him. Ann Coulter went against him. So if you really think about it, and, you know, who lost and who won, and Nancy Pelosi, the final thing I'll say is the resurrection of Nancy Pelosi, because remember last year, everyone was like, Nancy Pelosi, she's too old.
She's old. Get out she's of beyond the, yeah, it's past her, yeah.
She's beyond. I mean, just look at the rehabilitation of Nancy Pelosi. Now Nancy Pelosi has her own memes, and millennials love Nancy Pelosi, and she's wearing shades and drinking tea, and people are like, yep, Nancy Pelosi, she's our leader.
Because she's good at her job. At a certain point, even if you are a woman, even if you've endured decades of being, you know, ridiculous attacks from, like, right-wing radio host, if you're, like, the myth of, like, Pelosi the evil one, at the end of the day, if you're just really fucking good at your job, that can matter. And Pelosi is really fucking good at her job.
And guess what? They rehabilitated her, right? Because, you know, they were trying to destroy her, but now she's flexing. And then I'll give you one example of how she flexed recently. Did you see her Twitter thread where she openly just, like, blasts Trump and goes, why isn't he critical of Putin? What does Putin potentially have on him? I'm like, the fact that the Speaker of the House was so blunt asking these questions on Twitter, I've never seen that before happen in my life.
I did see that. It's a remarkable thread because it's not like the first time anyone's asked those questions or said that, but it's the first time anyone's not Hillary Clinton that's a, you know, in the Democratic Party establishment has gone there, really, especially that bluntly and openly. And of course, she timed it for, like, what was it, like, I think like an hour after Trump finally signed the bill reopening government. So she waited until he actually got that through, and then she's like full on attack again.
Because they know that the Dems have the House now. They know the public is on their side. They know Trump has been weakened. And so she played her card skillfully. And I think that's what a lot of the base also wants to see. Not just the base, but even Republicans who are polled. They want Trump to be held in check, right? They want accountability.
Yeah.
And so now here's like literally what we're seeing is Pelosi flexing. And it's kind of beautiful to see.
So would you buy a t-shirt for $50 if you knew it only cost $7 to make? We wouldn't. And with Everlane, you never overpay for quality clothes.
Everlane only makes premium essentials. It uses the finest materials without traditional markups. They want you to know what you're paying for, and most importantly, Susan, why. So they actually tell you their real costs, and they are radically transparent about every single step in the process, from the materials they use to the ethical factories they work with.
If you want inexpensive but high quality and good looking clothes with essentials, the basics that we all need, go to Everlane, because they have the stuff that you can wear over and over and over again, and that will fit in your wardrobe in all kinds of ways. And the essentials they have, like their Cotton Crew t-shirt, they're exactly what they should be. They're simple, stylish, and quality.
They also have quality cotton basics, and that would make my South Asian mother very happy. Premium Japanese denim made at the world's cleanest denim factory. I should probably pick up a denim. I do not have one. And perfectly fit, wait for it, Oxford shirts. Outerwear made from, I'm not making this up, recycled water bottles.
You need to get some of those and tell us what it's like. I'm very curious.
Yeah, I've never actually worn a shirt made from recycled water bottle, but I'm open to new experiences, Susan.
They have men's clothes and women's clothes. And for women, if you have holes in your wardrobe, there's things in your closet that you don't have there, like a basic black work dress, basic little jumpers throw over, try them out. They look great, and you won't pay a lot for them. And right now, you can check out our personalized collections at everlane.com/45th, plus you'll get free shipping on your first order. That's everlane.com/45th. everlane.com/45th. Well, Trump winning here would have always been sort of metaphorical. The wall's never getting built. There can't be a wall. It's not going to happen. For Trump, the goal is to do something that he can say, hey, look at my wall, and have some actual wall built at some places, obviously. But, you know, 70 miles here, 50 miles there, call it a day. So for him, the win was always rhetorical. And I think that they were banking on the fact that if they caused enough pain, the Democrats would be willing to give him a win on paper in exchange for the reality of, yeah, of course the wall's not getting built because it won't be, because it can't be, because no one wants to be built. And instead, no, the Democrats held the line. Because it's not just about not wanting to give Trump a win. That's part of it, of course, and it should be. But the idea of ceding a rhetorical victory to Trump just to get the government open, yeah, that's going to encourage him to take more hostages.
That's exactly it, right? And you don't want to negotiate with terrorists. I'm not saying that Trump is a terrorist, but that's, you know, taking that analogy to the next level is because it rewards bad behavior. And because he painted himself in the corner, because he's such a terrible negotiator and so incompetent, so reckless and so narcissistic, and because they had them on TV, right? It's his shutdown and he's stuck. And the thing with Pelosi and team now is that they don't have to actually cede anything for the wall. They don't even have to give it to him on paper. But my concern is this, and this is, you know, since we're in prediction land and nobody knows anything, what he can say is the following. I tried so hard for a wall. I got stymied by the fake news, by the libtards, by the deep state, by even, you know, people who betrayed me in the Republican Party. I gave you guys two Supreme Court justices. I gave you guys the tax plan, which is the beautiful tax plan, which will help the middle class. And he goes, and I tried for the wall. I made America great again. Everything's rigged. And my prediction is no matter what happens, he's going to crawl his way barely to the finish line. And then in the next year and a half, Susan, this is my concern, is that he still has a huge chunk of America. Like, if you think about the people who really like him, 35 to 38%, that's a huge chunk. If he turns that chunk against everyone and says, I am your leader, I am your savior, believe in me, which is, by the way, what happens in fascist governments, he can take that chunk. And my prediction is he's not going to run again in 2020. He's going to say exactly what he said the week before the 2016 election, where he thought he would lose, where everything's rigged. He's going to say everything's rigged. Everyone's against me. He's going to say he made America great again. He's going to say exactly what you said, that I tried for the wall. And look, I got some of the wall. He'll just lie. You know, maybe he'll put some fence up there. And then he's going to take this 35% base. I think he's going to take him to Trump TV.
No, that's never going to happen.
Really?
No, not a chance.
Why?
Because Trump likes power. Trump likes being in the spotlight. Trump likes the thing of being president. He will not just walk away from it unless he's forced to by more than just his ego.
Oh, so you think he's going to go for round two?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Plus, there's the whole fact that if he manages to get elected again, by the time, you know, his end of his second term comes around, there'll have been a lot of possible charges against him that have expired due to statute of limitations.
Look at you, so cynically. I think this is the Roger Stone indictment is just the beginning. And I think the pain is going to come. And the pain will come. Yeah, the Dems taking over, and especially on the committees with Elijah Cummings on the Oversight Committee and with Schiff on the Intelligence Committee, and especially as they do, you know, we've talked about this, the nerdy work that no one wants to do, which will really expose them, which is the financial trail, and the indictments will come. And, you know, my prediction is, because, you know, everyone predicts, so why not me, they're going to get Don Jr. if they got Roger Stone. I think he's going to limp to the finish line. I don't think it's going to be worth it for him to run again. And to go through this, because he never really wanted to win, right? Like, we've discussed this before, and everyone who knows Trump, even Howard Stern, his friend, said this openly on CNN, that Trump never expected to win. He just wanted to use it to basically amplify his position and his negotiation with NBC for The Apprentice, right? He thought, okay, I'll run. It'll help me with my business. I never expect to win.
See, that's and, way too know, strategic. Trump wanted to win. He's Trump. He craves power and attention
so?
And glory. Yeah,
oh, no.
He's a much simpler creature than this scheming media giant that you're thinking he is. I mean, look at his negotiations on the side of The Apprentice for a salary. He basically just took what was handed and called it a day.
But don't you think he's also like, you know, and I hate comparing Trump to a child because we infantilize him. And, you know, I don't want to insult children. But you know how, like, children don't really have, like, an appetite for patience, or they're not good at deference, and they're not good at, you know, they want instant gratification. I feel like his ego, his narcissism, and his insecurity is so paramount to his personality that, yes, he loves the adulation. Yes, he loves the praise. But he also isn't as stupid as we think he is. Like, he knows that the world's attention is on him. Why would he go through another 4 years of this masochism?
Because he likes how much attention he gets. We'll see. I mean, I can see scenarios where he doesn't run. But I don't think they'll be voluntary in the way you're implying. But before we move on to this week's biggest news, and while we're talking about predictions, so the shutdown's over, but this is not the end of it. The deal was a continuing resolution. Basically said, okay, we'll keep the status quo from last year going until we figure this out. But it's got a 3-week, you know, time limit on it. So what, February 15th was the date? I can't remember exactly when. About February 15th is when the shit hit the fan again. So what's going to happen when we come? So here's what we know is not going to happen. There's not going to be a deal to make the wall. That won't happen. That's off the table. I mean, it could happen, but I cannot imagine any scenario where that comes to be. So 3 weeks go by. We have no deal that includes money for a wall in the way Trump wants. What do you think happens?
Wow. No money for a deal for a wall. So two things can happen. National emergency, which automatically will get litigated and automatically will ensure that, as you mentioned, the no wall would be made. It'll just punt it, but it'll placate his base. At the very least, it'll help bolster the narrative that I tried my best and I was stymied by everyone else, the fake news, you know, the deep state, blah, blah, blah. Or the new trend or the new talking point here is that Republicans have learned their lesson. It's not worth it. And then they are going to come together on a compromise and basically fund the government with the promise in the future where Trump's going to say, I funded the government. I made it happen. I'm the one who took, control of the situation. And then they're going to have a future promise for border funding, which, of course, is going to be just BS. The cynic in me says that he's kind of stuck and he might declare the national emergency. But the pragmatist in me would say, with the type of infighting that has happened within the Republican Party, you know, that closed door meeting where they turned on Mitch McConnell, the fact that there's six senators, the fact that they're seeing the poll numbers, the fact that the public now is kind of has tasted the dysfunction and does not want another round of it. I think they'll negotiate, Susan. A part of me, you know, just has faith in Trump's self-destructive tendencies and need for chaos. But I think McConnell has learned the lesson. And I think McConnell will actually steer some sort of a resolution.
But see, you know, that makes sense in a certain like abstract level to me. But in reality, I don't see it working out because the only kind of demands that the Democrats are going to accept, the only kind of concessions that might entice them to give some fake wall money away has to do with like DACA or serious immigration reform. And that's never going to happen. Trump can't give that.
No, he can't at all. As soon as he even mentions DACA, you see the base.
And Coulter flips her shit.
Yeah, she just says he's the weakest president since George Herbert Walker Bush. And oh, no, look, we're doing amnesty. So he's stuck, right? In a strange way. In a strange way, there is some karma here that he might just end up dying on this wall, which is glorious because, you know, the first thing he said when we descended the staircase and made the announcement for the presidential campaign, he called, you know, Mexicans rapists and criminals, some of them, but, you know, some of them are good. And the first 30-second ad that he dropped, the only two issues, if people remember, you can watch this ad on YouTube. It was a 30-second ad where it showed all these brown people running. And that was apparently like, you know, immigrants in a caravan coming across the border, except that it wasn't Mexicans, it was Moroccans, but, you know, whatever. And the other issue was the Muslim ban. So the fact that he's kind of stuck, right? He's stuck between this hard right white nationalist base of Ann Coulter that sees any path towards immigration reform as, you know, weakness and amnesty. And apparently just yesterday, Stephen Miller, our favorite incel, allegedly said that he does not want a single refugee to ever step foot in America again. So he's got that base. But then he also has the reality where a majority of Americans don't have the appetite anymore for this wall. So this is why I think he's kind of stuck, which is awesome. And this is why I think he will say what you were saying, right? He'll just pontificate and bloviate and make these fake promises and say that Democrats will come around, blah, blah, blah. But then Mitch McConnell, I think, will be the one to step up and get shit done because...
But he can't do it. We can't do it without... Well, I guess they could actually at this point. They probably have enough numbers to override the veto.
Because 2020, if you look at the map, it is not favorable to Republicans, specifically the senators, right?
But McConnell has definitely cast his lot so hard with Trump. I cannot see him publicly breaking with Trump. I can see him working against Trump behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen. It's going to be behind the scenes. It's going to be behind the scenes and they're going to come together. They're going to massage his ego. Trump will come out. He'll spin it like he always does. He'll make sure that the chaos is seen as like, you know, the turd sandwich is a roast beef sandwich. And anything that went wrong, he's going to blame the Democrats. He did that on Twitter during the freaking shutdown that he initiated and sustained. Who was he blaming? He was blaming the Democrats, right? He was blaming Pelosi. And everyone's like, no. So that's Trump. That's what he's going to do. And behind the scenes, McConnell, who is like the evil genius, who's probably one of the worst. You know, McConnell, at the end of the day, the history books.
He's the democracy killer.
Yeah, the democracy killer. He'll get shit done because, look, 2020 is coming up. And it's not just Trump's presidency, which is at risk. It's also the Republican Senate majority, which is at risk.
Okay, that all makes sense in theory. In the abstract, that sounds like how things would play out in Washington. But I just don't see how that happens as a matter of reality, given that it's unless the Democrats change their minds and accept something else as a concession, that deal is not workable. Unless like there's a serious DACA deal on the table, unless there's serious immigration reform, Democrats aren't playing ball. And McConnell, I don't think he has the power to actually go against Trump on this thing. He cannot unite the Republican Party behind supporting DACA, which is what it would take to basically not allow Trump to veto this. So I think that we're heading for probably even a scarier version of the shutdown this time around.
No, it's definitely possible. And then look, the Dems, it's in their interest, and I hate saying it this way, to say, okay, you want to shut down the government again?
Oh,
go
but,
for it.
But it's not going to be like last time. I think the next shutdown fight is going to be more dire because Lindsey Graham's now going about saying that the next shutdown or the next negotiation round should be based on the wall money being tied to the debt ceiling hike, which comes around in March.
Right.
Now that, right. This is like the shutdown, I mean, yeah, like it's rough, but like you can survive a few days with the shutdown. I mean, it gets worse as time goes on, but it's not like a hard stop, like, oh God, we're in crisis now. If the U.S. decides to default on its debt obligations, that's going to have mass repercussions. Like, before we were playing, like, chicken with, like, bumper cars, this is like chicken in real cars on the edge of a cliff.
Yeah, with the cars on fire.
Yeah, yeah.
In a hellstorm. I think we've seen enough with the Trump administration, both before he became president and during the last 2 years, that we should not put any chaos and cruelty beyond him and the people around him. It could happen, Susan. And look, I've said this before on your show, I'll say it again. I think that the only thing that will change some, not all, but some Trump supporters is pain, immense pain. I have kids, Robbie has kids, you know, sometimes the only way your kid learns is like, hey, don't put your hand there, don't put your hand there. And the kid puts a hand there and starts crying, goes, Baba, and you're like, I told you not to put your hand in there. And I feel like this type of pain, I hope it doesn't happen. But if it does, you know, it'll be, first of all, it will hurt the entire economy like this latest shutdown did. Everyone will suffer, but in particular, the base will suffer. And if the base sees this chaos back to back with the chaos that they just experienced with this 35-day shutdown, I think that will be the death knell for the Trump administration going to 2020, which is why I still see some sober minds like taking over. And I do think that they're going to threaten. So Graham's threatening, right? He goes, I'm going to threaten you. I'm going to threaten you. I'm going to threaten you. And I think your chicken analogy is on point. But we have Pelosi at the wheel. I think Pelosi is going to drive that car straight through. She's not even going to swerve. I think she's going to like put it in neutral and just drink her tea and just take the car straight forward. And it's going to be the one who's going to swerve eventually is going to be the Trump administration.
Man, you are really optimistic today.
Because look, you have the Grahams and the McConnells and the vulnerable Republican senators and the people who are like the old guards. And the people who are the quote-unquote adults in the room, which I hate using that analogy because these are all grown-ass men and women, and Donald Trump is 72 years old. They're all mother-effing adults. They are not as stupid, right? So I think behind the scenes, you're going to have these very tough conversations. And I think at the end of the day, this is all that they need. Trump needs an out. Trump, if you look at Trump's psyche, he's very predictable. He can never be seen as weak. He can never be seen as the loser, even when he loses and even when he's weak. He always needs to be seen as the big man, the strong man, the savior. As long as they can give him a narrative for his base, which the rest of us is rooted in like delusion, but that can allow him to appear strong. But in the deal, they do exactly what we said, which is, you know, basically bipartisan compromise to avert like crisis. I think that's what they're going to give. And he's going to come out, he's going to tweet something, he's going to give a speech. And hopefully we'll avert this crisis.
Eventually, every presidency comes into a real, genuine, external crisis. We have yet to find out how the Trump administration is going to handle one of those. I think we are getting closer to one every day. And also not just one. There's like four or five kind of hovering around the periphery here that might hit at any moment. Eventually, the status quo is going to fall apart and something bad is going to happen that Trump cannot get out of just through optics, just through media, just through rallying his base. And well, we'll see what happens then. But yeah, the pain will happen for everyone then. Let's move on to happier news. This is kind of rough.
And no, I mean, also, you know, there might be, I mean, we don't, they're predicting this, who knows, but, you know, there might be a recession by the time his presidency is
up. Oh, there will
right?
be. This cannot last much. Like, there will be a recession within the next year.
And the government shutdown, and another thing we should point out, people say has accelerated that possibility. And so the rest of us, unfortunately, have to suffer. Which reminds me, and before we move on to happy news, I'm old enough to remember the George W. Bush presidency, and he was elected the second term. I knew he'd be elected. And it had the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression and a disastrous foreign policy decision, the Iraq War, which finally motivated some people, Susan, to say, you know what? Maybe this was a bad idea. And then what happened? We elected our Black Muslim president, my brother Barack. So, but in order to get to that point, what I'm saying is the way America is, it's so stubborn. It's like it's almost like we're that stubborn masochist. We just have to like endure pain. And the rest of us who are like trying to be the Cassandras warning everyone, we're just seen as the crazy people and we have to suffer along with everyone else.
Yep. There will be pain, that's for sure.
There will be pain.
But sometimes good things happen still. And this week, something good did happen. I mean, it took a while. We knew it was coming, but it finally arrived. Roger Stone was indicted.
Yay! No one should feel unsafe at home, period. Fear has no place in a place like home. That's been SimpliSafe's mission from day one.
You'll even see a commercial this week during the big game on Sunday. Be sure to check it out. I mean, I won't be because I watch football, but you can see it there.
I will actually be seeing it, and you'll see SimpliSafe blanket your whole home with protection. It's around the clock, commercial monitoring, and make sure police are on the way when you need them. The security sensors are tiny, blending in with your home so you won't even notice them. And The Verge calls SimpliSafe, quote, the best home security, end quote. And it's a wire cutter top pick.
As more than 3 million SimpliSafe customers already know, it feels good to fear less. So protect your home today. You'll get free shipping on any system order. Just visit simplisafe.com/45th. That's simplisafe.com/45th to protect your home and family today. simplisafe.com/45th. I mean, if you could go back to 2016, go back to like November 9th, 2016, and if someone told you in about 2 years, Paul Manafort, Mike Flynn, and Roger Stone will all be indicted. What would you think? I mean, on the one hand, it makes perfect sense. On the other, it seems unbelievable.
Yeah, you're right. It's like the campaign chair, the deputy campaign chair, the national security advisor will all plead guilty. And the dirty trickster, the liar, Roger Stone, longtime confidant, will have a 7-count indictment against him. A part of me, the lizard reptilian part of my brain would say, of course, yes. But then the part of me that thought there would be some normalcy would say, nah. But here we are.
And worse yet, now imagine someone comes back to you, they're a time traveler, and they say, I've been to the future. I've seen what happens. All the senior people in Trump's orbit in the campaign get indicted, except for Steve Bannon.
Yet.
I don't think he's going to be. I think he's actually going to skate through this thing. Like, can you imagine that, though? Like, on the day after the election, knowing that all these guys are going to go down, but not Steve Bannon, actually. He's going to skate on through because he wasn't actually involved in the shit, apparently.
But you know what? If you read Fire and Fury, the book that came out last year, believe it or not, which seems like 10 years ago.
But he was a source for that.
Well, yeah, he was a source for that. But he kind of called them out on their stupidity on this and said that they're going to get screwed. And apparently he wasn't involved in the whole Trump Tower meeting. And he wasn't as involved in the Russia connections. That was mostly Manafort and others. So I wouldn't be as surprised because I think, again, according to what we've read so far, he kind of always knew this was a shady and reckless.
Yeah, and I totally agree. But I would not have guessed that, that he was the one to realize that.
Yeah, but with Michael Flynn, for sure. And I think people forget that President Obama warned President Trump about two things. You know when they had the meeting during the transition?
Yeah.
North Korea is going to be a major threat. You know, be very careful about this. And then, you know, the other thing he warned him about? The two things he warned him about. Michael Flynn. People forget that. He said, be careful about Michael Flynn. I know he's close to you. Don't bring him on. And what did Donald Trump do? Brought him on as a national security advisor. So I'm not at all surprised by Manafort, Gates, Flynn. But the fact that this is happening means that Mueller is, it's Mueller time. Like Mueller ain't playing around. And if you read that indictment and you see what he got him on, it's not just lying. It's tampering with the witness. It's obstruction. And if he really got him on obstruction, then I've said this on Twitter the last week. You know a person who should be sleeping with one eye open, furiously rubbing their newfound beard every night? Don
Cruz.
My opinion.
Oh, wait.
Oh, you're not. Yes, no, not Ted Cruz. He should just sleep with one eye open for being Ted Cruz. But
yeah. He probably does anyway.
Yeah, with his lizard eye. No, Don Jr., don't you think Don Jr. should be like seriously freaked out right now?
He's absolutely. I mean, who knows where all those stories come out, but every week it seems like we have a new article saying Don Jr.'s telling friends he expects to be indicted. It'll happen. We'll see if it happens. He's undoubtedly has exposure here. Whether it'll happen or not remains to be seen, but he definitely has exposure. To back up a bit, though, the Roger Stone indictment is, well, again, it's, as the Fox News heads are calling it, it's a process crime indictment, which just means it's a crime, but also involves trying to cover up other crimes, theoretically.
Yeah.
The actual charges against him are based primarily on his lies to Congress and his witness intimidation and his threats that he'll get Randy Credico and his little dog, too.
Yeah. Sorry.
That actually happened. That's a real thing. That's really going on in our world. Oh, my God. Like, Roger Stone is threatening a radio host over his dog, Bianca.
You know, that's when you know you're a villain, is when you start threatening dogs.
Roger Stone has always known he's a villain. He's always wanted to be a villain.
Yeah, but like dogs, that's like you know, even in Hollywood movies now, like the Joker doesn't spares the dogs. Roger's like, no, I'm going to go there. I'm going to go full villain, like 100% villain. I'm going to threaten the dog. And you know, he was waiting his entire life to do the Richard Nixon peace sign as he walked out of the courtroom.
He was. He is loving every moment of this. I mean, he's probably also scared and worried. And it's not a fun thing for anyone. But yeah, he's enjoying this.
And he knows he's going to get pardoned. I think he'll get pardoned.
I don't know. I mean, Trump has never been known for his loyalty to others. And he's got a better shot at it than most because he is publicly taking the right line. But the thing is, Roger Stone has very few friends. No one really, like, it's not like the Republican establishment wants to see Roger Stone get off of this. Like, they don't want to help him. They want to help Trump, but they're not going to, they don't want to see Trump pardon him. If Trump feels like he has to, he'll do it anyway. But it'll be hard for him. It'll cost him a lot.
Yeah, but this is where I think Roger Stone, if he was smart, what he would do is he would rally the base, right? And he's also rallied Fox News to kind of come support him and say, look, there's no collusion. Witch hunt. So if the base sees Roger Stone as an extension of Donald Trump and as a victim and martyr of a deep state conspiracy against Trump, then Trump actually wins by pardoning.
The problem is, it's hard to seem like the victim of a deep state conspiracy when there's emails where you threaten someone's dog.
It doesn't matter. Look at, if you've been following right-wing news coverage over this, they immediately denounced it by saying there's no collusion.
But also, I have not actually seen anyone defending Stone's conduct. They all know it's true he did that kind of stuff. They will defend Trump, and if that requires defending Stone, they will. But Stone himself is, we'll see.
You might break, because he's such a cartoonish villain and so egregious in his unlikability that it might be the case. But he seems, look, I think Mueller's got him, man, dead to rights.
Oh, yeah.
There's been admission that he literally admitted that he conversed with Guccifer 2.0, who was a Russian agent. He admitted, the contacts with Assange and WikiLeaks. He miraculously, like Jerome Corsi, knew about the email dumps because they're like Tony Romo. They just know what's about to happen.
Yeah. The party line has not been that Roger Stone is innocent. The party line has been that Mueller is out of control and going beyond his mandate and reaching really far. But they're not actually defending Stone's innocence because they know they can't. So you think
they're going to okay, you might be right. You think they're going to sacrifice him if necessary.
Oh, they would absolutely sacrifice Roger Stone if necessary, if they can. But let's get to what Stone's actually charged with.
Here's a question. Can I have a question real quick,
sure,
right before you go to the charges? Would Trump sacrifice Don Jr.?
Yeah.
You say yes?
Yeah, if he had to.
Okay, all right.
He would protect Don Jr. far than he would protect Stone. But if it came down to it, I think that if enough was gained from it, he would do it.
All right.
So the Roger Stone indictment, I mean, the whole thing is like, parts of it are like, well, of course that happened. And then there's a lot that's still pretty opaque about what's going on with Stone and with WikiLeaks and with, his cast of like rotating dumb henchmen. But to me, the most interesting line in the whole thing is towards the start in the background section where it says, by in or around June and July 2016, Stone informed senior Trump campaign officials that he had information indicating Organization One had documents whose release would be damaging the Clinton campaign. Now, they never really go back to that. They just kind of move on and talk about stuff that happens in August and, you know, late July, but August, September, October. But what did Roger Stone know in June and July? Was he just guessing? Was he reading news reports or reading the stuff that, you know, WikiLeaks was saying publicly about what they had and just pretending to have insider knowledge? And if so, why are they including that in the indictment? So yeah, open question there. How far back does this go? We don't know. But the indictment itself focuses primarily on the activity after the first WikiLeaks dump at the end of July 2016. And most of it involves persons one and two, which I think are definitely confirmed to be Jerome Corsi and Randy Credico. Credico is the guy who has Bianca the dog. And Corsi apparently is actually a PhD from Harvard.
Who just somehow sold his soul along the way and became the premier conspiracy theorist for the right wing.
Yeah.
Cranking out one or two books every year.
And all of this is like goes back to InfoWars and Alex Jones. And that's insane. Like Alex Jones is like an important figure in like the political world for Republicans.
This is the America we deserve, Susan.
Oh, my God. No one deserves that. That's too far.
This is as American as it gets. Of course, it's InfoWars, conspiracy theories, social media, Alex Jones without his shirt, eating a bowl of chili.
Alex Jones is the most irredeemable human being I've ever seen, like, in your report. Like, there's nothing about him that is appealing or understandable or, like, I just don't get it. I don't. Like,
two things. Donald Trump is our president, and both of them are very entertaining.
I get Donald Trump way more than I have ever understood the Alex Jones thing.
He's an entertainer. He has the rush.
He's not entertaining. He's just, like, rambling and gross.
But that's why they love the spectacle of it. It's like WWE. He rambles, gross.
He's turning the frogs gay.
Yeah, he's loud. He feeds on your anger. He's got some
assortment of like vitamins to sell you.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is people kind of forget that because even Rush Limbaugh, right? People forget that Rush Limbaugh always wanted to be a sports commentator. He fell into politics. And once he fell into politics, he used basically that same type of big radio sports personality, brought it to politics. It melded it with right-wing politics and voila, it's a winning combination. Even Glenn Beck, people forget, Glenn Beck's dream was always to be like a old school type of radio talk show entertainer, right? One of those people who did like storytelling on radio. Well, you take those skills, you basically apply it to the dark arts and sell your soul. And then you get very, entertaining right-wing personalities, which explains this showmanship of Donald Trump and Alex Jones. And this fascination in America with like, you know, myth and entertainment and larger than life personalities and celebrity and voila, which is why I go back and say, this is America. This is the America that we deserve.
So Rabia, how are you going with your New Year's resolutions?
Girl, I gave up on New Year's resolutions years ago because I never kept them. And you know what? 80% of us actually fail at sticking to our resolutions every single year.
That's why I stopped making them in the first place.
You never even tried. A very common resolution for people is to, you know, aim for better health, to just, you know, take care of themselves better in the new year. But there's just no quick fix when it comes to better health. It's all about starting daily good habits and then sticking to them. So enter Ritual, the obsessively researched vitamin for women. Ritual Essential for Women fills in all the gaps in a woman's diet with a fresh, minty flavor, no fishy aftertaste. It's got vitamin D3. It's got omega-3. What I love about Ritual is that I've been using Ritual vitamins at least 6 to 8 months. It's been a while now. You just got to take two a day and you're done. You don't have to worry about like thousands of bottles of pills.
So for those of you who did make resolutions or just want to get healthier in the new year, try Ritual.
Yeah. What makes Ritual easy, along with the fact that it's just two pills a day and you're done, is that it's a subscription service. It comes to your door. You're not going to have to go out and buy it. And, you know, I mean, like, I'll tell you the truth. When I have to go buy something from the store, it ends up taking me 2 weeks to get out to the store to get it. And I get a notification. I get an email saying your ritual is on the way. You can also snooze it. So for some reason, if you, let's say you're, I don't know what, for whatever reason, you don't need the bottle or you can put it off, you can just click snooze on your account. And it only costs $1 a day to have all the essential nutrients your body needs delivered to you every month. I mean, it can't get more affordable than that.
Better health doesn't happen overnight. Start your year with Essential for Women, a small step that helps create a healthy foundation for 2019 and beyond. Visit ritual.com/45th to start your ritual today. That's ritual.com/45th. So big picture here, though, what the Stone indictments are trying to address is how and when and what did Stone and other Trump campaign officials learn about what WikiLeaks had, what their plans with it were? The indictment does not answer that question. The indictment just adds more questions to what the hell's going on. What is clear is that both Corsi and Credico, Credico's friends with Assange's personal attorney, and Stone all have their own connections to WikiLeaks. They're getting some kind of info from someone. They're passing out to Trump people. But whether it's just like, it's still pretty unclear how and what information is being exchanged. But the most intriguing suggestions in there have to do with, like, one, how soon do they know about the Podesta email hack? And again, those emails, the tweet we have from Roger Stone from, what, like, August, saying, like, it'll soon be Podesta's time in the barrel.
Right.
And the other one, which is implied in the indictment and came out more forcefully in, like, a Washington Post article on Corsi, the WikiLeaks dump that was timed for right after Access Hollywood. Was that coordinated?
Right.
Because now we start looking at seeing where the underlying crimes might be. If the Trump campaign knew that WikiLeaks had stuff that damaged Hillary Clinton, if they asked them to wait and try and drop it right after the Access Hollywood article came out, so that they could then theoretically try and distract from that, which didn't work at all. But if they planned that, that's trying to use stolen materials that a foreign adversary stole from American citizens to try and win an election. So, yeah, that'd be a big deal, too.
And also, Donald Trump, in his last major rally before the elections, what did he say? Russia, if you're listening,
yeah,
you might be rewarded. People forget that. No, that's within the timeline. And so this is why I think this is very damning.
And he knew that Russia was listening because he was talking to Russia about building a tower down there. So, yeah.
And also because, you know, allegedly people within the Trump campaign encouraged Roger Stone to reach out and they were aware of these damaging emails. And lo and behold, like you said, right after the Access Hollywood audio drop, which should have killed Trump's campaign, magically, the timing was so magical and coincidental,
it was.
Susan, that's when you had this massive dump. And so, you know,
and remember, WikiLeaks had a big announcement. They, like, 2 days before, 3 days before, they said they were going to announce that drop something big. And then they didn't.
Yep.
They declared a security threat to Julian Assange, and they did not release it. And then suddenly they decided the best time to, like, get maximum publicity for their stuff, which is theoretically the goal of an organization like that, was right after the, like, biggest news cycle of the entire campaign. No.
So I'm just, yeah, it's just disconnected, right? How did Roger Stone know in advance? How did Jerome Corsi know in advance? Why did Donald Trump say that? You know, specifically about emails, Hillary's emails, you will be rewarded, Russia, if you're listening. Then the dump, and now the indictments and the connections and threats, right? And so these people are such bad criminals, probably because they're reckless and arrogant. Who knows? But thank you, God, for their recklessness and stupidity. That I don't think that trail, that literally that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 direct connection is going to be that hard for Mueller. And the question then becomes is, do you think Roger Stone will flip on Trump?
Oh, yes. If Stone thinks he has better odds flipping on Trump, he'll do it in a heartbeat. Like, quicker than anything.
Yeah.
Even so, quicker, I mean, than Trump would turn on him. Stone would turn on Trump.
And you know, I think we mentioned this on this show, like, last year. I feel like the ending might be like Julius Caesar, where they all just turn on each other, right? Like, it's like the end of Goodfellas. It's like everyone ends up being a rat. And I feel like, because I've always given the Goodfellas analogy, I think if you've seen that movie, we're at that scene where he tells the babysitter to not use the house phone to make the call, but she does. And the brother is still stirring the sauce to make sure it doesn't stick. We're at that scene, like the last 10 minutes of that scene.
Never seen it.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me. Oh, what type of American are you? You got to watch
this. A bad one.
A bad American. Your patriotism is lacking, my friend.
Yeah, I totally missed all the references to all, like, the mob movie stuff and the indictment that are Stone's emails. But there's one thing that the Stone indictment did not address that I have been wondering about for 2 years, that 2.5 years now. And I was really hoping, as we're reading the indictment, like, oh my God, they're going to finally address this thing that happened. They did not. Anyway, the indictment talks about how in early August 2016, there were a lot of communications back and forth between Stone and Corsi. And at the time, Corsi was in England and Europe doing something. And they were talking about WikiLeaks plans, and, like, oh, start playing up that Hillary Clinton has bad health, because that's going to be relevant later. And then right after that, August, I think it's 12th or 14th, I'm blanking the date right now, August 12th, I believe, 2016, Roger Stone went on InfoWars, and he talked about, you know, his back channel to Assange, and then he said this.
It is almost laughable in terms of the last couple of days, Alex. First of all, I myself have been hacked into my personal accounts, my business accounts, my political work, a number of my bank accounts have been accessed all within the last 48 hours. As soon as it became publicly known that I was in communication with Julian Assange, now there is a massive effort on Twitter and Facebook to discredit Assange. That's because the Clintonistas know that Mr. Assange, who I believe is a hero.
We haven't talked about this because I only talk about stuff like this on record. If I was Assange, you'd be a smart guy to give some data caches to, and I'd be giving it to hundreds of trusted people right now.
Well, I lost some data in the hacking, some things that I was about to publish, manuscript for my next book on the Clintons has been stolen, some other items, nothing that is not recoverable. But for example, my entire contact list, people I deal with regularly, is wiped out. It's gone.
And so by the way, you don't like to bitch and complain, but we have to report this as a war. You're being audited. You've paid them, and they're just saying you didn't pay your taxes.
The IRS is harassing me over 2014. I paid all my taxes and everything owed.
And they just say that they're ignoring your check. They're ignoring the cash check and your return. They just say you're a criminal and you didn't pay.
Well, first of all, I've been through this. Somebody filed a false return in my name. That means when I went to file my return online, the system kicked me out. I had to hire an attorney. We filed the correct forms, and we paid our taxes. This is all documented in writing in the correspondence between my lawyer and the IRS. Now the IRS has amnesia.
So, yeah, why would Roger Stone on August 12, 2016 start making a big deal about the fact that he'd been hacked by unnamed people who hacked and stole all of his contact lists, stole his manuscript for a book he was writing? Who would hack him for this, and why would they do that? Like, why would they not use the materials they got? What were they aiming for? He's talking about how he lost all his emails. Hackers don't go in and delete all your shit usually. Like, hackers are the type that WikiLeaks was, you know, dealing with and doing. They go and steal copies.
Yeah, they work in the background.
And then it gets worse. Later on, a couple days later, in a Corsi article that he wrote for InfoWars, I guess, or something like that, or WND, one of those bullshit publications. He quoted Stone and said that Stone said the hackers who penetrated his personal bank accounts managed to establish an online portal through which they began stealing money before they were detected and stopped. So wait, what? You're saying that there are some strange monetary transactions going on from Roger Stone's bank accounts right at the exact same time he and Corsi are emailing about how to get information from WikiLeaks? Who the hell is this money going to? Why the hell was there not a police report filed about it? That sounds like kind of a fucking big deal right there, that you have money going from Roger Stone to someone else, and he is going on TV, InfoWars. He's going on InfoWars to say, oh my gosh, some hacker sent money from my account to some strange places. I don't know where. I had nothing to do with it. He is setting up the world's worst alibi there. So what the hell is that about?
Do you think he's trying to, in his own weird self-destructive way, is trying to give himself an out that he's a victim?
No, I think he was covering up what he did. Something happened. He was covering it up. He had to delete all the emails. He had explained why money was going out. So he came with this hacking excuse to explain why he was destroying evidence and why he had made.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's just trying to give himself cover, absurd cover, for perhaps like his own, I mean, I don't want to say illegal, but maybe should we go there and say illegal activities? And he said, oh, there was hacking. It was hacking. It was a hacking that wiped away everything. Not me. And like a hackers came and did it. So I think he was kind of anticipating that maybe he had put himself in jeopardy with his admissions, and then maybe the Mueller investigation or anyone in the future will come and like look after him. And so he was just trying to give himself, like you said, an alibi.
Yeah, no, 1,000%. He definitely had some email. I'm sure he had some emails that he realized were, oh, not a good idea. So he deleted them. And then he had to explain why he had suddenly lost all of his emails for a certain time period. And he came up with this hacking story.
But the base believes it. The base will believe it. So there you go.
The base has forgotten it. No one seems to remember this. I keep waiting for it to come out like, you know, like Chekhov's gun. And we're not there yet. I thought for sure this indictment would be the time we find out what exactly Roger Stone was trying to destroy.
But, you know, this indictment is not the end all be all.
It is not. Like, it is not. So this is a delayed act. We have to find out later, hopefully.
And also, you know, everyone's saying, oh, there's no conspiracy. Well, there's no conspiracy yet.
Oh, there's totally a conspiracy. I mean, like, look at they're conspiring to do something.
But as a charge,
oh,
right?
Yeah. Well, that's like, one way of looking at it is that Mueller didn't find any kind of deeper charges. And that's why they're not being brought forward. The other way of looking at it is that once you bring those charges forward, all the dominoes fall so fast that we're at the end game.
That's what I'm saying. And he's being what we've seen so far from the Mueller investigation is being very methodical, and he's only bringing out stuff that he knows he has them dead to rights, right? So maybe he's just waiting to make sure he has everything 110%, and voila, he might get hit with some more charges. And like, look at Michael Cohen, right? He got him for tax fraud, bank fraud, lying to Congress, right? Like, it all kind of happened one after another, after another, after another. It wasn't just like a one-off. And even with Manafort. So with Roger Stone, that the fact that they're perused, are looking into him, have a 7-count indictment, I don't think he's out of the barrel yet.
Oh, no. They were already interested in him in 2016. He was already like ranting on InfoWars about how the IRS was trying to get him for not paying his 2014 taxes. And his story was he just forgot to pay them. Or no, someone hacked his IRS account and filed a tax return in his name. And that's why he was unable to file his own taxes. And that's why the IRS was trying to get him for not paying his taxes. It was a bullshit story.
That's so nice. You know, I would love it. Any hackers, if you'd like to, pay for my taxes and file on my behalf and my wife's behalf.
But make sure you do it right, unlike the ones who hacked Roger Stone's IRS stuff.
Pay in full. Maybe just pay a little bit extra if you want. Go ahead. It's fine. I'll get a rebate maybe if the government's open in 2020.
I feel very confident this is not the end of Stone's troubles. But the question is, where does the Mueller investigation go from here? Now, Waj, did you watch that Whitaker press conference yesterday?
That was painful. You know, it's one of those things when you feel bad when someone is struggling and failing. Like, you get like a visceral reaction. You start cringing.
I feel that all the time. I did not feel it here. I'm the worst at that. I can't watch like TV shows sometimes because I can't handle it. This guy, I was like fascinated by how clearly and distressed and bizarre he was acting.
It was like the incompetent version of Kingpin. And I'm thinking, like, it just kind of reminds me of Kingpin because I'm watching Daredevil season 3 right now. But it's like a really weak, incompetent, like, confused, dumb version of Kingpin. He was sweating profusely. He was mumbling. This was kind of his first big, if you kind of think about it, like, his first big conference. Not impressive at all. Didn't inspire really any confidence. And I'm trying not to be partisan about this. But just you look at a person, you're like, okay, I might disagree with them, but at least they have some poise. They speak well. They have confidence. This was terrible. Like, he was sweating. Like, you wanted to throw in the towel.
This is like an early stage form of Bannon. Like, Whitaker evolves into Bannon. That's how it looked. But to back up a bit, this is about Mueller, but Whitaker's conference was actually nothing to do with Mueller, nothing to do with special counsel. It was to announce charges that were being brought against a Chinese corporation, Huawei, which I probably didn't pronounce right. And it was basically a lot of financial crimes, a lot of like white collar stuff, a lot of like avoiding sanctions, Iran, that kind of stuff. It's interesting and complicated. We'll fast forward through that for now. And it has to do with also the executive that was arrested in Canada. And the U.S. is now seeking extradition for. And in response, China has been like grabbing Chinese citizens and holding them. It's a clusterfuck.
It's actually a big, I mean. Well, maybe one day we can revisit it.
Yeah,
it's a big story. And especially with Trump kind of openly allegedly saying that he thought that maybe like the arrest will actually help him gain leverage with China.
I know. This is such a disaster. Bad. This is definitely worthy of like much deeper treatment. This is a big deal on its own. But we'll fast forward that for now, because definitely this is not an over subject and it has serious ramifications for U.S. foreign policy long after Trump. But here's what Whitaker said in response to a question towards the end of the press conference.
You know, I've been fully briefed on the investigation, and, you know, I look forward to Director Mueller delivering the final report, and I really am not going to talk about open and ongoing investigation otherwise, but, you know, sort of the statements that I made were as a private citizen, only with publicly available information, and I, you know, I'm comfortable that the decisions that were made are going to be reviewed, you know, either through the various means we have, but right now, you know, the investigation is, I think, close to being completed, and I hope that we can get the report from Director Mueller as soon as possible.
So, okay, now, if you're just hearing that and have not seen the video, picture this guy standing there, like, kind of doughy white dude, just sweating buckets down his face and looking extremely physically uncomfortable the whole time. just to give you an image.
Very apt description, actually. Very good. Took me back. It's like as if it's in my mind. Painted the scene beautifully.
It was a very beautiful scene. Yes, it was. It was disturbing. But so why was he so distressed? Like, on the one hand, like this is a party line that's come out of Trump people for a while now. Remember, like 2017, they were like, "Yeah, the Mueller investigation is going to end by Thanksgiving." Sure. So it could just be that. It could just be more of this like continual pressure that what like every single time it happens, Mueller ignores it. Mueller never actually shuts down the shout, anything like that. So it could be more of that. Like Whitaker is just trying to pressure Mueller indirectly and ineffectively. On the other hand, this is a guy who is now fully briefed, quote, on the Mueller investigation. He is the acting attorney general.
Right.
Why the hell is he making statements like this if he doesn't know what's going on? Like, there's no good explanation for what's happening here.
Well, it could be because his audience has always been the audience of one, which is Donald Trump.
It could be.
And people forget the acting attorney general, Matthew Whitaker, basically applied for the job by being a cable news commentator. And that's how basically Donald Trump liked what he said. And that's how he got on the Jeff Sessions team. And because he was so critical as a private citizen of the Mueller investigation, right, and basically signaled that he would cripple it or limit it, voila, how does this incompetent, unqualified man who has literally zero respect within the department somehow leapfrog over everyone else and become the acting attorney general? And so I think his audience has always been the audience of one, which is Donald Trump. And I think his audience was the audience of Donald Trump this time, but this time it was done as acting attorney general. He's way in over his depth. I think that whole comment you made is on point about Mueller. Mueller ignores all this. Is like, I'm just going to do what I want to do on Mueller time. I think he's basically giving Trump and the base some form of delusional, if you will, liquid courage with that press conference, but with none of the aplomb or confidence of a Sarah Sanders or even a Jeff Sessions.
This could be kind of the equivalent of like someone saying like, "Oh yeah, I sent you my draft brief like an hour ago. You didn't get the email? I'll send it again." Like, his job is to get in there and to get rid of Mueller. So he's like, "Oh yeah, that's totally ending soon. Just like you told me, boss. Totally on that. Definitely coming to an end soon."
That's his. It's his audience of one. It's Trump. So it's like, I got that. Yeah. About that Mueller. I got that.
Totally.
Yeah,
it's definitely ending up now. But did you see that article about? It was from the Slate, but it was a journalist who got an email from Whitaker's wife.
Wow. Why would I'm reading it right now.
She saw an article that about her husband that she didn't like, so she decided at work one day to write an email to the journalist, a very long one. And most of it's kind of like, I don't know, it's not that interesting. But she says towards the end, and she's talking, to give context, a very sarcastic, sort of like snarky aside, "And by all means, assume that a person who speculated on a hypothetical scenario would then put some dark plan into motion when, by all accounts, the investigation is wrapping up and the eyes of the nation are upon them." So why does she know that this thing is wrapping up? Like, what is Whitaker telling her? I guess the same thing he was saying in that press conference.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, look, it's the fact that Whitaker, and like, we've talked about Whitaker before. Like, it's comical and tragic that this man is the acting attorney general based on his own history and comments, which include he's against Marbury versus Madison. Okay, wonderful job, counsel. He says that only Christians should be judges in his eyes, right? Not secular judges. Wonderful. So much for separation of church and state. And also, you know, he's tied to that company which has allegedly committed fraud.
Let's just call it fraud. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, fraud. And by the way, defrauded veterans, just to show you the type of caliber of people that Trump surrounds himself with. And the fact that he, again, basically auditioned for the job on cable news. So he's a hatchet man. He's a partisan hack. He's a guy who just wants to be there at the favor of Trump. He does not belong. And the fact that his wife just decides, hey, let me just go email a Slate journalist with misspellings and reiterate the talking point of my husband, the acting attorney. It's like not normal. Like, we're not seeing like, you know, Jeff Sessions' wife or Bill Barr's wife like making commentary. Like, this is not what's supposed to happen.
But we are seeing a Supreme Court justice's wife making some commentary. Oh, Justice Thomas. But that's a subject for a different day. Okay.
No, can we just mention to the audience, because that was such big news that got buried. Can you just briefly tease it? So basically, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas's wife is a massive right-wing activist. She had a meeting with Donald Trump, a private meeting, which already is slightly disturbing. And in that meeting, basically, she was opposed to transgenders serving in the military. She was opposed to women serving in the military. She basically just hammered him. And you're sitting there thinking to yourself, wait a second, the Supreme Court just upheld Trump's executive order 5-4, which would ban transgender individuals from serving in the military. Why is the wife of a Supreme Court justice, who is also a major right-wing activist, having a private meeting with the president? Isn't there something called, I don't know, conflict of interest? And why is this woman telling him that it's wrong for women to serve in the military? Just throwing it out there.
Yeah, no, it's all disturbing. I mean, it's on the one hand, she's a private person, so that's why this weird limbo occurs. But the fact she's doing this openly is just more another strike at the independence of the judiciary in the Supreme Court. It's considered like, it's fine for them to be married to someone who's openly lobbying for the president's position. Like, it's a mess. Like, between Thomas and Kavanaugh, Supreme Court is not going to be what it once was.
No, and especially with this 5-4 ruling, which, by the way, guess how Thomas voted?
Well, yeah, it was not surprising. But
well, I'm still saying, like, I mean, imagine
the
if
appearance,
this was reversed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is just pure naked conflict of interest, and, like, it's just so shameless. At least be subtle about it. Like, the fact that, like, you don't want the New York Times to run a massive piece on this where, like, all the talking points were discussed openly. But they just don't care, because this is what happens in a kleptocracy.
Yeah, subtlety kind of died on November 9th, 2016. So, see, now you're sounding cynical, too, just like me.
I'm just, the thing is, because we're drinking from a fire hose of chaos, right? And so it's very easy to be numb. And I think the test for us and for the audience is not to be numb. The fact that this piece of news that we just kind of casually mentioned, because even I forgot it until you brought it up, the fact that it died within 2 hours, it's because there was so much more chaos. It's up to us to put in that extra emotional work, if you will, to actually care and say this is not right. But once you're dealing with a government shutdown and you're dealing with a potentially corrupt president that could or could not be, manipulated by a foreign adversary, which is Russia and Putin, and you're dealing with a Republican Congress where they'll take a hatchet to democracy for the sake of power, and you have a potential recession maybe looming, and climate change, and on, like, there's only so much that you and me and your listeners have the bandwidth to care about, right? And this is how the Trump presidency is like a cancer. It'll corrupt the things that we're not looking at. It's all corruption. It's all pain. Like, there's nothing good that comes out of this. Let me put it that way.
No. You don't just reverse this. This is long-term. No, you don't just get past this. You don't just elect someone new and move on from what happened. This is, I won't say permanent. I mean, permanent is a very long time. This is a lifetime change in our government.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a radicalization of a party, a Republican Party. I don't think people are still, Susan, I think, like, wishing that the Republican Party will become normal again and the adults will take over. I don't think they're paying attention. I think Trumpism is unleashed. And I think what we're going to see is a shift towards more and more extremism. And of course, there's going to be a response to that. And because, you know, what happens with the Trump presidency is the Overton window shifts to the right. So the center gets shifted to the right and everything becomes skewed. Hence this entire conversation for the past year. And what's seen as normal or tolerable also shifts, which is why you have Steve King still in Congress as a white supremacist. And my prediction, and sorry for this quick aside, is that a more polished version of Steve King promoting those type of white nationalist talking points is going to be the future of the Republican Party.
Steve King, who knows not to say the explicit part out loud, but to say everything but, yeah. Well, on that happy note, we'll end this week's 45th, and we'll be back next week for our second mid-shutdown episode, possibly the second of third, until we resume the shutdown or resume the, falling off the fiscal cliff, debt cliff. Yeah, good times ahead for America. And we didn't even talk about Venezuela, because that deserves a whole episode in itself. And
it totally deserves an episode of itself.
Next week, we'll talk about Venezuela and apparently the 5,000 troops in Colombia that were written down on, like, yeah, no, that's next week. So next week will be foreign policy and whatever new stuff has come at us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in 7 days.
Bye.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.